Hello and welcome to the Don't Choke version of Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast. You'll notice the mellifluous tones of my voice today. I had a little choking issue yesterday. I don't know why I bring that up, but other than to say, Mark, be nice to me today, will you? Okay. You know, I was a little infirmed yesterday. Come on, man.
We didn't play golf yesterday, so you didn't. That's usually when you do your best choking.
Wow.
Too soon.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how long did that be nice, Mark? Work about
what? Well, Joe, this reminds me of when Brett Favre, you know, because you were ruled out like at 7 o'clock this morning, you were ruled out. Like when he against the Bears when they played at TCF, when Brett Favre was ruled out, and then he ended up playing. This is just sort of very much like that because here you are.
Yes,
yeah, so continue.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. You know, what's his name? Dan Jenkins once wrote a book, You Gotta Play Hurt. It's one of my favorite books I read a long time ago. And you gotta play hurt, Mark. You go down, you gotta get back up, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we just talked about Bud Grant not long ago. And, you know, Bud's looking down, smiling, Joe. He's happy that your durability, Joe.
Okay, you meant more than made up for the golf shot. Okay, I'll take that. All right. Well, I guess what I'm talking about is Vikings better not choke on everything that they're taking on this summer, because they are taking a big chomp out of that roster. And the latest one to go is Dalvin Cook, as we all know, the worst-kept secret of offseason personnel moves for the Vikings. What's it with the Vikings? Do they just not like guys named Dalvin? Dalvin Tomlinson and now, you know, Dalvin Cook? See ya. What's going on, Mark?
They don't like guys named Dalvin who are making too much money is what it is. So they got the Browns ended up overpaying, I think, Dalvin Tomlinson. Hopefully not, but I think Dalvin Tomlinson had the intention of coming back here. And then because I think Cleveland gave him more than the Vikings could give him. But as far as Dalvin Cook, yeah, I mean, they brought it along, hoping and then kind of I looking at it from the outside, it was kind of comical to me that where I'm sure that the Vikings are, you know, in some way, shape or form tried to drum up some interest, like a little war between Buffalo and Miami. Cause we all kind of assumed that Dalvin would end up in Miami if he got cut. And then suddenly started hearing, yeah, you know, Buffalo might be interested. Buffalo could be a landing spot, you know, and just to get someone to take his contract. Well, yeah. Clearly nobody in the league wanted his contract. Otherwise, they would have been more than happy to give the Vikings a seventh round draft pick, you know, or whatever, nothing, you know, just to get that contract off their books completely. But nobody was going to do that. It's, you know, Dalvin's still a good player. He's just financially, there's so much more to the NFL now than just talent. It's your contract and your age and the analytics and all that stuff.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that is because there was reported from Tom Pelissero, you know, one of our Minnesota own that you and I used to work with out at Winter Park in TCO. I don't know, TCO, he still works out there occasionally. But he reported that Cook didn't want to restructure his contract to make it easier to trade him. He didn't even want to restructure it before he left, you know, just so that they could find a trade partner. He just said, nope, go ahead and cut me and I'll do it on my own. And I don't blame for that, but it does sound like a little bit of ass chapping and bitterness there from old.
Well, why, you know, I don't know why a person, especially, you know, you got to look at it from Dalvin's standpoint. Dalvin is one of the best running backs, still one of the best running backs in the league. Dalvin's, I don't know how many Pro Bowls or how many 1,000-yard rushing seasons he's had consecutively, four maybe, or something like that.
Yeah.
Played every game last year. So there's, if I'm Dalvin, there's no reason for me to be hanging a discount. Do it to myself. We hang a discount card around my neck and say, please, you know, please give me less money so I can go somewhere. You know, he's probably, as far as I know, today has not been signed. So, you know, it's kind of funny, like out at TCO, I think one day, you know, O'Connell said goodbye to him and hopes that he finds a right fit. I think the next day was Kirk Cousins saying, holding out hope that maybe he re-signs here. You know, but I don't see a guy like that's re-signing here. I think the Vikings have moved on from him, and he's, you know, in doing so that he's moved on from them. I would assume that he's, you know, if Miami makes an offer, I mean, if he's holding out for, like, he's trying to make a little bit more money. But, you know, give him, he may do a 1-year deal. Who knows? He's got to come to the grips with the fact that running backs just aren't going to make that kind of money that he was making. So, you know, but he'd be in Miami. I'm sure he would not be clipping food stamps or clipping coupons for stuff. So he'll find a way to get by, but it is a little, you know, it's harsh reality for running backs in today's NFL.
Yeah. You know, looking for $10 million, I don't know if he's going to get it, cause there's not a whole lot of suitors for that. If there was somebody that wanted him, they would have made that trade and just, you know, beforehand and just said, I got to get him before someone else does. So I'm sure they're trying to get a bargaining discount. Everybody's trying to, most teams don't have a heck of a lot of cap space at this point. They're moving in, they signed all their players for the off season and they're moving into camp. So I don't know if they just got $10 million sitting around for running back, but I loved watching Delvin. I'm sad he's leaving, but I understand it completely. I hope he gets it for his point, and I hope his career keeps going. There are some people that it will make you mad when they leave if they do well at, but he's always been such a stand-up guy and just thrilled you off and on from time to time. I'm hoping for the best for him,
I think, we talk Miami because he's from there, and the fact that, they could use a running back of his skills, and boy, would he look good next to Waddle and Tyreek Hill. But another good landing spot, as far as, I don't know what people are saying about it, but in my own mind, a good landing spot for him, if you're not happy with what the Vikings, stepping up and giving you money, or the fact that everyone else was prioritized over you. Maybe he does a little bit of a, speaking of Brett Favre, you jump ship to an AFC or to an NFC North, you go to Chicago, and maybe you become part of that rising. He looked pretty
that
good.
I would not like to see that. Then I wouldn't be cheering for Delvin on that.
Yeah. So Chicago would be a good fit, I think, if they got plenty of money. I don't think anyone wants to give him a contract that's gonna give him. You know, certainly not $10 million at his age. Running back, they don't, their shelf life is, it's unfortunate because they probably take as much punishment as anybody at any position, but their shelf life is shorter, and they don't make the big money. Or if they do make the big money, it's very, a tighter window for making that kind of money.
You know, I just wanted to, you made a point earlier, I wanted you to expand on a little bit. You said that Kirk was, hoping that they would still have him around. And I'm wondering, where do you think the basis of that is from Kirk? A, he knows he's a really good running back. B, he's a decent pass catcher, and he's been a pretty good from time to time at picking up blitzes and helping protect Kirk, but maybe not as good as Madison or, I don't know. Why do you think Kirk wanted to still see him around here?
Well, because he's a talented player that can, he's a home run threat. I think if you took the financials off the table, I mean, they would love to have him. Maybe you would work the backfield with Madison and Madison taking on a bigger role in the short yardage. I think Cook with what he made and the fact that everything that they've done this offseason and talked about offensively is, how do we become more efficient on third and one, third and two, fourth and one, fourth and goal, third and goal? Dalvin, we have people have rattled off the Pro Football Focus success rate numbers, and where he ranks, he's ranked toward the bottom. And I believe those numbers because there were so many times where it was third and one, and he did have an awful lot of being a home run threat is great, but he also had a lot of carries where it was like, he doesn't move the pile. It's a 0-yard carry. It's a 1-yard carry. It's a loss.
Loss. Yeah.
It just wasn't to me. You'd love to have him, but with the financials the way they were, where they're at with the salary cap, the fact that that is a very deep position that they have, Madison and those other guys are exciting prospects to bring in. So. I just didn't fit here.
You know, God dang, did I just lose? Oh yeah, that you did just great, Mark. You said exactly when I wrote up my intro copy for this piece to go online, I just said I brought up that point about the third and short yardage carries for Dalvin, and I said tune in and you'll hear Mark Craig say exactly that you just did.
Yeah, there I did.
That's
brilliant minds, Joe. Brilliant minds. Yeah,
exactly right. Well, we saw it so often last year. It was really frustrating, you know. So many times he would just go into the line and he didn't move the pile. And I don't know if I don't think it's fatigue. I think, you know, Madison would come in there and maybe they're not, you know, keen on him as much as they are on Dalvin. And he gets the ball and he does move there, and he's got a different running style. So, but we'll talk a little bit more about him in the next segment. Let me ask you one question, you know, putting on your NFL insider hat, and, you know, to some of the extent, I know the answer to this question, but maybe you can go a little deeper. What happened in this league and over how long and why did the running position get devalued to such a degree that the starting running back money is not going anywhere near what a guy like Justin Jefferson's going to get when he signs his contract? And I know the passing game has changed. It's become a different game, but how did this happen? Why did this happen? And is it the rule changes? You know, just talk about that. I mean, what the running backs used to be the thing. I mean, back in the day, I mean, you go back in the history when you and I grew up watching the guy, you know, Franco Harris and Emmitt Smith and all these guys that they just carried their teams right out of the backfield. But it's just the complete opposite now. And I find that transformation or that morphing so amazing that it has happened to such a degree.
Well, I mean, you can blame it on the Steelers because you're right. When we grew up, I mean, you probably can remember the 60s. For me, the 70s, the wheelhouse was O.J. Simpson and Franco Harris, Walter Payton.
Right.
You probably Gail Earl Sayers, Campbell. Jim Brown.
Earl Campbell.
I mean, that's my favorite all-time NFL player. And he used to, you know, I grew up a Browns fan and had to play Earl twice a year. But Earl Campbell was my favorite. You know, when we were kids, or, you know, the face of the team.
Yes.
Really, the face of the team was your running back. You know, the Steelers were so dominant. Their defense was so dominant. And other teams too, but 1977, the numbers, the scoring was way down. Well, the league, you know, really, 1978 was a pivotal year in the modern NFL, and where you could not touch you could not bump the receivers at past 5 yards. They let the offensive linemen extend their hands in blocking. So it became a passing league in 1978. Now, ironically, the Steelers went from dominating as a run team with Franco, and then they just kept winning Super Bowls with Terry Moore, with Terry Bradshaw and the receivers.
Yeah.
But from that point on, you know, it's been just a constant evolution of going to the quarterbacks, obviously to the receivers, to where it's now you want your running backs. You don't even need that unless you have a Derrick Henry in his prime and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you have, and then like the Patriots went in with running backs that are kind of, you know, role players and they can catch out of the backfield. And obviously in the 80s with the Roger Craig and the 49ers and the way that they, you know, and also, you know, the Vikings were ahead of their time with Chuck, Foreman. As millions of stories writing about, you talk to Bernsey and he would always, you know, he'd say West Coast offense, and, you know, had those guys won Super Bowls in the 70s, it'd be the North Coast offense because they were very similar in that George
Walsh.
Chuck Foreman. Did I call him George Foreman?
Yeah, you did.
Chuck Foreman. You know, George Chuck. Chuck, you know, Chuck Foreman was ahead of his time. He led the league in receptions, I believe, 1 year was 73.
Yep.
It's become a passing, you know, passing league. The running backs don't need to. And you look at the Chiefs, last year with a seventh round draft pick that was a heck of a running back, and they seem to be. You can find them more affordable. Now the great ones, they still make their money, but they, like with Dalvin, he got his big contract, but it just didn't, he didn't make it to the end of it, because he probably, even he probably knew he wasn't going to get to the end of it and make all that money.
You know, I was, while you're sitting there saying that, it occurred to me the same thing. I said, you could very easily make the case that it started with Fran Tarkenton and Chuck Foreman making the running back a pass catcher more so for the short gains than, you know, he also had Ahmad Rashad. He had Gene Washington. He had some other, you know, because for me growing up, the face of the team wasn't Bill Brown and Dave Osborne. It was Fran throwing to Gene Washington and then throwing to, you know, some other guys. But you could say, you know, and that comes from the coach. So that might've been the start, and certainly cemented with, Walsh out on the West Coast and supplanted, eclipsed and supplanted anyway of what they were doing in Minnesota. And then as you move forward, and like you said, the Steelers, and now there ain't no going back. I mean, with the rules tacked on, you know, you've got, I mean, look at the obscene money. I think it's obscene what Justin Jefferson's going to get. Not that he doesn't deserve it, but trying to go back from my comment last week that he's over. But anyway, not that they
don't get rid of him,
but it seems to be an overcorrection that the quarterbacks and the receivers are getting so much flipping money. It's unbelievable.
Well, I mean, it's all relative. I mean, the league makes the pie is a lot bigger now than it was in the 70s.
That's true.
And there's nobody like Justin Jefferson not coming to OTAs. I know he said he was busy or whatever. Like, I had to laugh because, like, I'm just busy. I got things to do, you know.
I got stuff going.
I think, you know, everyone, you know, it's kind of an insult to everyone else. But, you know, he wasn't working a job. He wasn't I don't know what you mentioned Gene Washington. Gene was a businessman and, you know, he had a job of 3M, I think it was, or something. So these guys all were in the community working. You know, there's a reason that Bud Grant had 6 weeks of pure hell when it came to, or Bud wasn't pure hell, but Bud had 6 weeks of training camp. And, you know, these guys had to get back in shape because they were coming from jobs. They were car salesmen and businessmen and stuff like that. So, so these guys making this money, but NFL makes a lot more money. So the players, I don't begrudge the players getting their money.
No, not at all. And I don't either. It's, you know, you said Justin Jefferson's busy. He's probably busy Googling overthecap.com and seeing what the Vikings have for him and what anybody else and looking at other players' contracts. That's what he's doing right now, seeing what he's going to get.
Well, yeah, to me, if he's going to be getting this contract, you know, at some point here this offseason, well, you know, the thing is he's due to make virtually nothing, you know, relatively speaking this year, but then he's on the, you know, they did pick up the fifth year for next year at $19 million or whatever it is. Well, when he gets this deal, he's probably going to be making over 30. He will be making over $30 million a year. So there, it doesn't make sense to come to OTAs and maybe be in an atmosphere where you're going to increase your chances of getting hurt.
Right.
You wrench your knee and all of a sudden it's the contract talk is off the table. And then you got a lot. So I don't blame him with that. And he did mention that, you know, he will, first of all, he did show up for the mandatory mini camp and that he's, whether he gets a contract or not, you know, he intends on playing, you know, not doing any kind of holdout or whatever this year. So I think the kids handle it pretty well because this has been with his, you know, having three great years. The first year, I think people were talking about his next contract during his rookie year. And then it's certainly during his second year and then a lot last year. So I think he's handled it pretty well, especially when you look at, you know, how some receivers, how it changes them whenever they start talking about money.
You just said he's going to make over $30 million, and Dalvin Cook is struggling to find someone to pay him $10 million. how it's changed. There it is in a nutshell, right there. You know, it's crazy, but it's interesting. We'll take a quick break. And we'll come back and we'll break down, you know, without Dalvin, we'll look at that Vikings running back room and see what there is remaining there for them. And I think there's plenty to go for what they probably may need it for. But we'll come back and talk about that. Come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. We're with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune, who I forgot to introduce. He's their NFL insider and Vikings writer, long time expert. He's got that press pass. He's got that knowing insight that we all crave. And I got time to fill. So I'm just singing Mark's praises. Well, he did say some nice things about me.
Well, I did compare you to Brett Favre.
So. You did. You know, I'm not sure I want that. And I did it back in 2009. But nowadays he's got the little stain on his old reputation. But you know, I liked Favre for the way he played football and not the way he manages foundation account money. Anyway, the Vikings are without Dalvin Cook, as we established, and Alex Mattison, his backup, got $7 million a year in a new contract this year, which signaled for sure that Dalvin was on his way out when that happened a long time ago. I never knew how they could have fit that together anyway. As soon as he gets $7 million, how can you get, you know, Dalvin's got somewhere a little over 10 and, you know, you can't pump that much money into your running back position. You knew
I don't
that.
Know if it, I don't know if he got seven a year. I mean, really? Madison's contract wasn't like, he wasn't a huge contract. It's more in line with a team, especially a team that's up against the cap. You can look up what his contract is, but I don't believe it was $7 million a year.
All right, let's see here. You might be right, but it makes a good story. Let's see. In 2023, his
live reporting.
Fascinating stuff. No, you're probably right. I don't think I have that right. His cap number is a total for the 2 years that he's signed, 2023 and 2024, is $7 million. So that's my mistake. And thank goodness we have Mark Craig from the Star Tribune, because he knows all about those contracts.
I got my finger on the pulse of the salary cap and all that stuff. So
to
me that he's more in line with what, you know, financially what they need and frankly short yardage what they need. And when they go out and get a Josh Oliver as a blocking tight end we kind of made fun of it and talked about it several times. A day one signing on for free agency usually is a edge rusher or a corner or the Vikings when they signed Kirk Cousins, you know, that's your big day one signing, you know, or like when Brad Childress came on board, day one was the poison pill to get Steve Hutchinson, you know, and stuff like that. So that they're, you know, but in making fun of it and kind of poo-pooing it and stuff, putting it on the poo-poo pile that we were talking about weeks ago.
Call back.
They do need a, you know, they got to move the pile a little bit when it's third and one. And that, you know, that Justin Jefferson, when you can't get third and one or third and short, fourth and short, it just takes him off the field. And so if you have the ability to prove that you can get those short yardage situations, then, you know, O'Connell certainly is a risk taker. I liked how he called games. I thought he was a very aggressive play caller. So now suddenly on third and one, people might say, you know, hey, can't stop this. We got to watch out for Jefferson. And so that is kind of their focus. I think their offseason focus is, Dalvin's a great player, but for what they need a little more power, a little more oomph up front.
Well, was Dalvin getting you the first and second 9 yards? They got you to third and one.
Not that I recall. I mean, not good. I mean, in saying all this, it's like you don't, in today's arguments, you either you're on the trash pile or like you're when you talk about Hall of Famers or potential Hall of Famers. If you ever say so and so is not, you don't think that they're a potential Hall of Famer, people's mind automatically, you think he's a piece of crap. You know, you put him on this pile, and you know, there's a lot of nuances between. Like Dalvin what they need. And Dalvin, like I said, if you throw out the financials, Dalvin would be a great, certainly be a great guy to have on the team. But it's just not, this is a bad fit right now for them.
Mark, just like I said, because there is, it's the off season, so I can throw in all kinds of topics. And I saw a little steam for this online in the past week or maybe last week. Do you think Mark Craig is a Hall of Fame voter and all pro voter for those organizations? So he's a good person to ask. Do you think Harrison Smith is going to get some looks for the Hall of Fame? People are talking about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I always told him, I said, just, win like two more all pro and then, then just kind of solidify your, while you're still active, get at least another all pro in there. But yeah, I think that he'll be a guy that certainly gets, when the initial lists come out, you might, see him start getting some initial, I'd like to see him get another all pro. That would be, fantastic for his case. But what's that?
I said, would you be the guy that would be promoting them at the meetings, or is that, since you followed your whole career?
Depends on how long he plays, If he plays another 3 years, got to add 5 on top of that, he might be passing that one on to.
That's true. That's true.
Maybe
you can't follow in Sid's footsteps and do it till you're 100. What's your deal?
No, I remember when our sports editor retired at 65 and Sid's 99 years old, and he's going around the locker room going, I can't believe that Crevier, he quit. He up and quit. It's like, Sid, he's 65 years old. He retired. People do that, not Sid, though.
Nope, that wasn't part of his lexicon, the word retire. He never did.
He quit.
Back to the Vikings backfield. Alexander Mattison is great. We've said long and hard many times here that third and one or third and short, we know what we're going to get from him. He's not going to get every one. He might get more than Dalvin. We'll see. We'll have to track that this year. Dalvin did not do good on it last year. But how is he? And he's a pretty decent run blocker as far as I can think. I think even a little bit better than Dalvin. And how is he as a pass catcher, Mark?
Well, he didn't get a whole lot of opportunities, but when I think of Mattison, I think about, what stands out to me is every time he got the ball. Now being the number one guy, I don't think it's going to change him, but I think being that number two guy for as long as he was, I mean, every time he got the ball, it was like you had to, basically shoot him to get him down. I mean, it was, whether he was hurdling guys, you might want to, dial it back a little bit on the hurdling part, but hurdling guys, running really, really, I mean, extremely hard. So there's more power to him than his style of running. So, he's going to get more carries, obviously, but I don't think you certainly don't need to overload him with the depth that they have. And this Chandler guy, he was my breakout potential guy that they got as a rookie last year. I think he's going to be, I think Wes Phillips mentioned him as a guy a couple of weeks ago, one of the OTAs, as someone who's really impressed him and like, hey, watch out for this guy. Cause I think he was having a pretty decent preseason last year. Cause he was one of those running backs that, to get through the preseason, you need a guy, a young guy, a rookie, whether he's a draft pick or not, to kind of get those carries, cause you don't want to put that on a veteran, certainly not a guy you're paying a lot of money to. So, he was kind of looking good. He was looking good in training camp. So I think there's a lot of depth there and pass catching ability. And I do think that Mattison has the ability to catch the ball.
Certainly the number of chances that Dalvin got last year, Mattison can catch that ball that many times.
There was all that talk about how they were going to use Dalvin more as a receiver. Right. We didn't really see that except when the comeback against the Colts, there might've been a screen that went for 80 yards or whatever for a touchdown. Yeah. It was like when he saw it, you're like, hey, how come we didn't see some more of that? So if you're not going to use him the way you were talking about using him, that's another pebble on the pile of like, you don't want to give him that money, especially if you're not going to use him kind of the way that they were talking about using him. And as far as a pass protector, I think Madison's probably the better pass protector.
Yeah. You mentioned Ty Chandler. We also got Kane Nwangwu in there in the room. Do you think he's cemented himself more as a return man, and they're going to give the backup role to Chandler? And if so, either one of these guys, they are kind of stylistically a nice change up back from Madison. Those two guys, Nwangwu and Kane and Chandler, would you?
Yeah, there's also the rookie that they drafted this year.
We haven't talked about him yet. We'll talk about him.
So there's that guy. There's options there that I don't think that Madison. I think he averaged maybe 100 carries a season, which is a nice load. Another thing about running backs now, it's like, the days of I think. 15, 1600 yard rushers, probably, even though you have an extra game, you're not going to see as much of that. You don't need that to, I don't think you need that. You don't need Madison having 300 carries in this offense for him to be an impact player. I think
unless you want 100 block, you're exactly right. Unless you just,
That's with true. The Vikings, they didn't do a lot of eating of clocks last year when it came time to everything was like nip and tuck all the way to the end. He has that ability. But then, those other guys are like there probably isn't many guys faster in the league than Kane. And with the kickoff rule, who knows what their approach will be to kickoffs, because now you can fair catch it inside. The days of like kicking it to the 1 yard line and forcing teams to return it are over. They can catch it on the one and fair catch it. So
they got to give Nwangwu something else to do besides just going back there and fair catching a goddamn kick.
Well, and that rule, sidebar here, covering the Browns in the early 90s with Eric Metcalf, who was one of the best kick returners ever. Cleveland Stadium, they played where, the Indians played and the Browns played. So there you had the warning track right by the end line. Well, there was one where Eric Metcalf fields the kickoff, takes a knee, Steelers run down, tap him on the helmet, ball down at the 1 yard line. He thought he was in the end zone because it was the warning track had a circle to it. So on that part of the corner of the end zone, corner of the, like right by the pylon, was a warning track. So it's like he nailed it. But now that would be you get it at the 25 yard line.
Wow, that's what we got you on here, Mark, for your insight on the Vikings and your
if you want to know what happened in 1991 in Cleveland Stadium, I'm your guy.
They're going for it this offseason down there in Cleveland. They're they signed Deshaun Watson last year, traded for him, and then they've picked up some Vikings, and you gotta look at the Browns this year. It's tough over in the AC. You gotta keep going or you're gonna get ground under.
Yeah, and if you want a contrasting view of what my emotions were at the miracle at the Met, if you want someone who didn't like the miracle at the Met, I'm your guy there too. That was
rough. I loved it. That's why you're on here, just because I won money on that day. I bet on the Vikings to win the division, and that play took the NFC Central, whatever it was back then. And I was in a bar at college. I jumped up and kicked my chair over and ran to the bar to buy a round for the house. And some guy was there already doing it. I said, okay, I'm good. didn't buy the round. So anyway, yeah, I'll always remind you of that. Dwayne McBride, the rookie. His nickname, by the way, is Debo, I guess, Dwayne McBride. And I said, I'm going to go with Debo because he has too many mid-word cap letters for me to screw up. So when I'm typing it, so I'm just going to call him Debo from here on in because of Debo Samuel, because that's who he's going to be. He's kind of sounds like he's more of the Madison style of running back, wouldn't you say, as compared to the other two, Nwangwu and Chandler. They're more, a little more speed merchants, maybe. A big game play where McBride is going to plow you over, and it's really hard to bring down, kind of like Madison, as you were describing him.
Yeah, I mean, for just the brief highlights I've seen, and but I think all backs now have that ability to catch the ball and stuff like that. So I think the Jim Browns or even the Adrian Petersons of the world are I know Adrian was kind of getting outdated. Adrian was such a great runner, and every year it was like, well, what are you going to add to your repertoire? I think Adrian was 50 years old, and he was still saying, "I'm going to work on being a receiver and all this stuff." I think even as he went from team to team to team, it was, there'd be a story inevitably that would come out and say, Adrian Peterson, wants to be a better receiver. Well, it was just never comfortable. He was just never a. When we were talking to Adam Thielen, I said, "Who's the worst golfer on the team?" And he's Adrian Peterson. It looks like he's trying to kill a chicken or something with a club because he would grab it so hard. And so Adrian didn't have that finesse with it with his hands and stuff. He just wanted to grab onto your hand and try and crush bones. So I think he was kind of that way as a receiver. So you don't see as much of that anymore as Derrick Henry, I guess, is that way. But these guys, these modern backs have evolved tremendously when it comes to being a all-around player weapon.
You talk about Adrian Peterson's handshake. I was a little disappointed, probably the only person that ever was, media guy anyway. I had torn my ACL, and he had just had famously reworked himself to get his ACL redone and then won the MVP the next year. And so I was trying to decide whether or not to have surgery at my age, and I went up and asked him for advice. He says, "Well, if it keeps you from doing what you want to do, you should get the surgery done," which I did. But I shook his hand for the first time, and I was hoping to need hand surgery afterwards, and it was just a regular handshake. I was a little
Wow.
I was probably the only guy that ever has never been
Maybe.
able to not write about Adrian Peterson crushing his hand with a handshake.
Maybe Adrian walked away going, "Oh, that Joe Oberly. Ah, Joe Oberly."
What he probably walked away is that guy probably has hollow bones. He's falling apart. I better not crush anymore,
Oh, so he took it easy. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
I know that as over the years, whenever there was any cause for it, I went in. You had to go in like, you had to prepare yourself mentally to kind of go in with a wide and do the best you could, and so you didn't catch you completely, fish arm. So
You got to prepare for the handshake. I love it. Well, on that note, we'll take another quick break and we'll come back with some more Vikings news, items to discuss and see what else is going on. The NFL with NFL insider Mark Craig. Come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown podcast with Mark Craig, Mock Craig. I can't get I got my R's transposed there, and podcast and Mock Craig. So, are you from Boston?
I had a sports editor from Boston. Then like Mock, hey Mock, Mock. So yeah,
Oh wait, no,
MAK, Mock.
I think we've established that you're not from Boston. You're from Cleveland. What's that accent like, Mock?
My daughter just asked that today. She said
Really?
someone around here said it was like a Southern accent. I said Ohio Southern, and I might be south of here, but it's not a Southern accent. I think it's just kind of blank. Like maybe
Right.
like do Minnesotans realize, like some Minnesotans, they realize they have the accent,
Some
or
don't want to. We have it, and it's freaking popularized by the Coen brothers, who are, in fact, one of us. Mark's an honorary one of us. He's not a true one of us, but being a Cleveland guy with all their scar tissue, we take him in and put our arms around him and say, "Mark, welcome to the misery."
then you point up and say, "Here's the moon, the moon, the rolling of the O's." That's the
Oh God. The first time I saw the movie
our
Fargo,
coach, coach.
I got it. It was true. It was overplayed, but it was not
Yeah.
that overplayed. It is not. There was one point where this guy's out, he's actually, the scene was in Dakotas, but the guy's out shoveling his walk, and he tells him, and he just gets, and that's it. End the story. And I about fell off my chair. I said, "I know people who speak like that. They talk like that." So it was accurate. It was, like everything in movies, is dramatic,
Now, Joe, you give a you're the holy buckets guy. I had never, Holy buckets was never said when I was growing up in Ohio.
Really?
So that would like when a golf shot goes, you're the holy buckets guy, right?
But you
Yeah,
know,
but
a lot
we need to play some golf together. Holy buckets.
a lot of that comes from my dad. He had an a, he didn't like swearing. He worked in the construction business all of his adult life. You know, he was a union rep for a plumbers and steam fitters union. So he certainly was around plenty of swearing. And when I was working in the construction to go through college, I was around plenty of swearing. But he didn't like it in the house, so he had a substitute word for every swear word. He's had holy cripes. No. Jeefers cripes for Jesus Christ. He had Godfrey Daniel for, you know, and he had
Oh, yeah.
holy buckets, on and on and on. And these things will come out because they're just ingrained in my memory, and they'll come out and people look at me like, what? What did you say? And I have to tell their story because I can't stop it.
I saw Fargo before I moved here, and I still moved here, so
Well,
they might have stretched it a little bit, but not as much as
that
like Minnesotans say they stretched it.
oh no, it's there, and you can find it. I mean, if and you go to rural Minnesota, and it's even a little more deeper, maybe than in the Twin Cities. But there's no everybody that complained about it, I'd say, just listen, just listen. Sit around the campfire or whatever on the 4th of July or whatever, and just listen to people talk objectively, and you'll hear it. I'm sorry, it's true. But that's what the listeners come and the viewers come for this. They want to hear about your Cleveland ancient stories and our accent. So,
Yeah, I don't. We'll have to look at the tape to see how we got on this. So,
is there any reason why our off-season numbers just skyrocket? Oh, there is.
yes,
Anyway,
holy buckets.
a couple of things to touch on before we go. Danielle Hunter didn't show up for mandatory mini cap, correct, Mark? Anything to report there?
Well, yeah, I think it's a really tricky situation for the because they have been throwing money at this contract. This is a third straight year where they're trying to figure out a way to keep him happy. I mean, he signed that deal and immediately outplayed it. We've made reference a million times with what Anthony Barr told me when I was doing a story on Anthony Barr. It's like the Vikings, robbed this guy, with that initial deal, and he had yet to outplay it. Well, he outplayed it immediately with the like 2 14 sack seasons. So he is unlike, Dalvin's a great player, but Daniil is more critical to them having a good season. But in saying that, it's like I can see the Vikings standpoint and not wanting to give him, make him one of the top paid edge rushers because even though he played all every game last year, he did not look like the same player in that defense. And 2 years before that, he only played six games total, missing the entire 2020 season. And he's a year older, so it's a tough situation for I think for both sides because as he Daniil realizes that now is the time to strike. He's got him over the barrel a little bit. Davenport is only going to probably only going to realize his potential if Daniil's on the other side. If Pat Jones too is on the other side, there's a good chance that we don't see the best of Davenport. So and they need this pass rush for B Flow's defense to realize its potential. So he realizes he's got him over is why he didn't show up. It's why he didn't he has passed on his if he showed up for OTAs and did a little bit of which for Daniil is probably a less taxing workout than doing it on his own in Houston. He gets $100,000, so he skipped that. But on the Viking standpoint, it's like, what's it going to take to make him happy? And but you, I don't fault them for not wanting to give top dollar because we did. He's not he did was not the same player last year as he was. I know he led him in sacks with 10, but he just wasn't as comfortable. Now, how does he project into Flores' defense? We don't know. So it's a tricky situation. I hope that they work it out, but there could be a potential where he may say, I'm not going to take that. And then, he gets fined for not being at mini camp. It's probably a total of about 60,000, but that's nothing for him.
Chump change.
If he doesn't show up for training camp, he probably is not going to hold out in training camp. And then it becomes a standoff. And, I think the Vikings need him, but, how do they work out where it's they don't kill themselves in their future and they make him happy? But if they trade him, that's, I don't know what you get to replace what he can give you immediately, because I don't think you get a number one draft pick. I could be wrong. They need to work that out. They need to work that out. And because that's a critical part to them maintaining their, that edge that they can enjoy in the division.
You've told me the most compelling reason why they got to keep him. I mean, the way you describe the defensive line and how much they need him. It is tough because he is physically, he's on a decline too. They've clearly valued him over the running back, as we spent the first two segments talking about, because he's still around here yet. But I don't think you'd get a first for him because, it's a seller's or buyer's market. They're not going to sit there and give you a bunch of stuff because they know you might, well, I guess the Vikings are in better shape pot with their salary cap. They might not have to just cut him, but he ain't going to do him any good if he's sitting on the galdang bench or sitting back home watching it on TV. So I feel more confident now they're really going to try to save him. They might have to take a hit in the short term to get it done, because if he's not there, they don't have the pass rush. And it doesn't matter how you rebuild that defense, if you don't got somebody rushing the passer and getting home, B-Flow is not going to do that. He's going to say, see ya.
Yeah, and I don't know. Obviously he had the 2 years where he was injured. I don't know if he's like physically, if he's deteriorating, because I think he still is a physical marvel. And he, yep. But what my question would be was, he's clearly a 4-3 defensive end, and they made him a 3-4 outside linebacker. He didn't look great last year. I think he salvaged the year by having some good games, but overall, it was not a top edge rusher season in my eyes. And who's to say it'll be, in this defense? We don't know. So you're taking a little bit of a gamble if you're giving him too much money. And he's also, you got to have two partners when you come to an agreement. It's not like it's fantasy football where you draft a guy or you give a little bit more money and he automatically shows up. He's got to be willing to what's it going to take to get him in there? Looking at his age, he's probably looking at this is a big, he's been fighting this contract for going on 4 years, three, four years. So he's not going to come in just to be patted on the head. He's going to want a lot of money. And that is their biggest, right now, their number one priority, biggest question mark is, can they satisfy Daniil and get him in here? And otherwise, I just don't like the defense being very good next year if they don't have him.
Do you think
in there?
Well, it just occurs to me listening to you talk that, I mean, you need the other guy on the other side to help you perform. And in the first half of the season, Za'Darius Smith was the guy getting all the sacks until he got hurt. And Daniil wasn't doing that great. Daniil came on the second half when Za'Darius got hurt. Do you think they kept running out Z Smith out there, knowing, despite the fact that he was hurt, as that person to at least attract some attention from the other team, so Daniil could maybe get home? Is that?
I could see some of that. I mean, the decoy kind of lost its impact whenever there were stretches where Daniil, he was out there, but he was not. He was just kind of leaning on an offensive lineman. He lost his quickness. He lost, the strength in that leg, I believe.
You mean
and
Smith?
So he was
Smith, right?
Smith was out there, but he wasn't the same player.
Right.
Clearly wasn't the same player in the second half of the season. And I think Daniil maybe came on getting used to the defense. Now I have a lot more the way that Flores plays defense. I have a little more faith that he'll get more out of Daniil than Donatello did. But still, it's a gamble whenever you're talking about giving him, you know, north of $20 million a year. And but they got to do something. I would imagine that's number one on Rob Brzezinski's list right now.
Right.
Even ahead of Kirk Cousins, because Kirk came out, as we'll talk about, and kind of that he's gonna deal with that next year with his contract.
Speaking of Kirk, the professional just segued. Got anything on Kirk real quick? We're gonna probably talk about him next week more, right?
Yeah, I mean the highlight this week was him showing up and saying, you know, he's gonna the contract talks are over. You know, in his description, you know, they're gonna revisit that in March of next year, which. You know, by when his contract expires, it's like they can't franchise tag him, you know, so that's off the table. So, you know, when it comes, if you have a great year, you know, then the pressure comes to the Vikings, you know, like, can you re-sign him? What if, you know, say the Fortinet, he gets to the end of his contract, he has a great year, and the Vikings, you know, it's not just to assume that, well, you know, Kirk's just going to come back and work a deal and whatever, right. You know. Or, you know, what if he has a great year and they go far in the playoffs? Who knows what? You know, Kirk may say, you know what? I'm going to go play for the 49ers. I'm going to go do this. So there is, you know, there is risk on both sides. Because Kirk could have, you know, being the second year with O'Connell, you know, Kirk should, you know, be better, better, you know, so.
And that's a good point. He may, you know, my impression of Kirk is he is definitely a family man. And I don't know that he would go necessarily shopping unless it was just money that you couldn't refuse, you know, because he's getting paid very well. He likes it here in Minnesota. I don't know that he wants to move his family. He doesn't seem like a guy who wants to run around. He probably wants to sign one more contract, you know, and get out of it with a lot of money and his health. And then, if other people might come calling, if he has a great season, the Vikings will have to pony up some money for him, and that's fine. You know, if they're going to offer more, I'm not sure he would chase it unless it was markedly more, you know?
Well, no, he wouldn't just, I don't think he would just chase money, because the Vikings would be, you know, it's not close enough financially. I would, where he would chase it is a situation. Say it was the 49ers and their three quarterback situation doesn't pan out, and you know he's got a connection to Shanahan, or but yeah, it's not guaranteed he'd come back here if he had a great year.
Right.
I think that the Vikings certainly, you said it, you know, by being comfortable, by being, you know, if they have a great year, O'Connell, that's year three with O'Connell, and you know he's be 36, 37 years old. He's not Tom Brady, so it's not like he's going to just pick, you know, like a team that needs one – all they need is a quarterback to win a Super Bowl. He's not going to be that kind of demand, but he definitely would be in demand somewhere for sure if he has a good year.
Speaking of, you know, Hunter is not not at camp and not – excuse me – being particularly happy with his contract, there's another guy out there that was maybe not happy with his, and he might be available for the Vikings to get that big receiver. Old Diggsy didn't show up at mini camp in Buffalo, and his coach was not happy with that. Can you tell us that story real quick, Mark?
Well, I don't think it's contract. I mean, well, with Diggs, it probably is contract related somehow. But didn't he just got a deal?
Yeah,
around the time, well, extension, but I. You know, by now it's probably outdated. It could be outdated by now. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, he can't do the old, like, you know, he and Cousins, you know, I don't think he particularly cared for Cousins. But, you know, it's hard to like when you have Josh Allen, who's one of the top, you know, three or four quarterbacks in the league, if not two or three best. So I can't pin that on the quarterback but Diggs is that his personality.
Yeah,
Diggsy is at least so far with, like, you look at Jefferson's personality, you look at Diggs's personality, and very, very, very different people. I think Diggs is going to be a guy who's always going to have, you know, some me issues. Like, you know, it's always going to too much about him. Opinion is that, as opposed to the team. And so, yeah, he didn't show up the first day. I think McDermott that day was asked about his absence. He said, "I'm very concerned about it." So then, as the NFL is wont to do, with an hour to, you know, to work the spin and everything, when he came back the next day, I think he showed up the next day. The story suddenly was it was an excused absence. I told him he could leave, it wasn't like he just showed up and left. So it's kind of like, we just need, you know, when you're a family, you need some time apart sometimes. So he's come in. As Diggs will do, he's come in. Something's made him upset. He's had a temper tantrum. And, again, this is just my opinion, but he's a very childish type of person, player. And it's hard not to be, I suppose, in these situations, whenever you've been coddled or you have been, you know, the guy, and everyone has kissed your rear end from the time you were in, you know, junior high. Maybe it's hard to not end up like that. So that's just my opinion, my observation. I don't could be unfair, but he's still a hell of a player. If you can keep him happy, he'll give you everything he's got.
Yep. Yeah, in my opinion, I don't think for a minute he isn't concerned about this impending contract coming down for the guy who replaced him, and here in Minnesota, and will be mightily jealous of him being be the highest paid receiver in the league. So, I'm sure
Diggs
mind on that.
Yeah, he when he got his extension, I just remember, I don't know the numbers in front of me, but you know, when Tyreek Hill was getting paid and Diggs got an extension, and some other guys were getting paid. It's like, I remember making the comment, like, oh, how long before that becomes outdated for Diggs, you know? And,
right.
In the way that everything is advancing, obviously Jefferson's going to, you know, reset the market, and then
so it's someone about
come on after him.
So it's about the Benjamins, right? $100 bills.
Well, that's you even had a rookie come in with the coat with the Benjamins. So
that's right.
Jordan Addison, he'll be getting paid. Yeah. I think he'll be a bargain at a rookie deal.
I'm going to have to go storm the Vikings territory offices, because I need some more Benjamin since I'm playing hurt, you know, so I need that to happen. I think right after this podcast, I'll go do that. So.
Well, I don't think they don't have like an injured list. So you don't show up, don't get paid, Joe.
Well, on that note, then I'm cutting it off. That'll do it this week for Vikings Territory Breakdown. Thanks a lot, Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Thanks, Mike Woldham, for behind the scenes, for producing it. Thanks to all you folks for tuning in and checking us out. I know you needed that update on the Minnesota accent. I'll try to roll my O's and say, yeah, sure, you betcha, holy buckets and all that kind of stuff, yada here next time. So thanks, everybody, and thanks to Joe Johnson above. We'll see you guys later. See you next week, and until then, skull.
Skull.